Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Yeah, buddy. Second half.
It has been all Padres so far. Bottom of the fifth inning, Padres lead the Dodgers 6-1, the MLB rivalry that we all need. Julio Urias has come out of the game after getting lit up the first five innings for the Dodgers. They checked his hat. They checked his glove before the game, like they're doing. They didn't find anything, which makes sense because Urias didn't have anything tonight throwing the ball. And so the Dodgers now trailing 6-1 Padres as they bat in the bottom of the fifth inning. They also checked Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
Yu Darvish was clean. And so, look, this is the first day we've seen of MLB umpires checking. They checked Jacob DeGrom in the, after the first inning of his game today against the Braves, in which he didn't give up a run again for five innings and won again. He's 7-2. The guy's going to be the Cy Young MVP. He was healthy. Everything was fine today. So baseball is trying to figure out how to do it. And we have seen how it's worked. The starting pitchers are checked after the first inning, and relievers are checked when they come into the game. And if that's how it's going to be, well, then I don't think you're going to wind up finding anybody loading up the baseball. Because if pitchers know that we're going to check you after the first inning, no one's coming in like Daniel Stern from Home Alone 2, where he's got all the sticky stuff around his cast. I'm just sticking it in and getting gold watches and stuff sticking to it. No one's going to do that in the first inning, and no relievers are going to do it when they come into the game. Could you potentially do it later on? Yeah, you could.
Yes.
But knowing when you're going to get checked, if you get caught, then you're just stupid. And I think baseball is counting on that, okay, we don't want to see these real negative headlines, so we're trusting that pitchers aren't going to use things the first inning when we're going to check them. Use stuff later on and don't make it obvious. What can we really do? But that first inning, don't do it. Don't get caught. Don't be stupid.
Yep.
And so far, no one's been stupid.
Just going to have to be real crafty about it, at least for a week or two until everybody stops caring.
Because they will. If nothing happens for a week or two, we'll move on. It will be okay. They've gotten rid of the sticky stuff, and it becomes a new headline.
Well,
which is
what
great.
Else are you going to do, right? Otherwise, it becomes after 2 weeks. They found a better way to cheat.
Doesn't everybody find a better way to cheat?
Well, of course. Really? You're always looking to build a better mousetrap. But it's, and it's been legal, illegal for 150 years. What was the start date on baseball? 1860s or thereabout?
I think so.
70s,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's when I started doing fantasy baseball, was in the 1870s, sure.
Well, sure. Whatever date you want to put on it. Look, fantasy football was in the 60s, so there you go. Rotisserie baseball, 1979. There you go, my nerddom coming in from old books written. But the idea that you didn't have this going all these years, and then suddenly you have an offensive slump, so everybody's a cheater. And here's all the problems, and guys that have been doing this for a decade are suddenly outlaws. I think it's one of the more laughable things that baseball's done. And we're going to start right now. We might have told you in spring training, hey, just be ready for 2022. Nope. Here we are, mid-June, because offenses suck, and too many people are using an old stock image of Dave Kingman. We need to change up how we're approaching this. Not you guys, not the way you're hitting, not your hitting coach working with you to adjust to the way pitchers are throwing. No. Let's change the game that way.
And that's why baseball's done this. It's been a perfect game for them since last week. They decided, okay, we have to address this. Then what are we going to do? We're going to start checking everybody starting next week. Okay, we're giving you a chance to be able to throw pitches without having any sticky stuff on it. Take the next week or two and figure it out. Okay, we did. Now we're here on Monday the 21st. What are we going to do? We're going to check you after the first inning. All right, great. Don't load up before the first inning. Baseball is doing exactly what they want to do. They want to make it seem like we're on top of this when they're influencing pitchers to just put less stuff stuff on their hands, and don't make it obvious that we catch you. Don't get out of control, because that's where we are right now. We don't want to catch anybody, and they're not going to catch anybody. This is perfect. It makes it seem like they're addressing a problem. The problem's going to ebb a little bit. I mean, it's not going to go all the way away, but as we said, our players going to find different ways to load up the ball? Yes, will they do it as much? Probably not. And baseball in a week is going to say, okay, we've taken care of it now. All right, now hopefully we get more runs and everything happens, but we've gotten rid of this pesky loading up the baseball with sticky tape problem, and now we're moving on. It's worked out. It's not, this isn't them coming in saying, okay, we're cleaning the game up, and I'm here I am and making sure that I'm going to ride everybody out of town who winds up going afoul of the rules. No, this is, hey, we look like we're on top of it, and we're kind of influencing the pitchers to back off a little bit, and it's working to perfection so far. 100% perfection, exactly what Major League Baseball wanted, just like this.
Well, I'm going to give you full credit for the callback to our Dora the Explorer discussion with the sticky tape, but now it becomes the, all right, everybody, it's like a test kitchen. Right, I've got the test kitchen cookbook from the first 10 years. You know, we went through this recipe 97 times before we settled on this. Iteration 96 was the best. Same thing here. Hey, anything that's a clear, you know, thing in the spirit of Vaseline without being Vaseline, I need you guys to work with me because we need to have something else to fool at Major League Baseball with. Wait, we're going to introduce an alternate jersey that I can hide stuff on? What? What? Wait, what? Sure, let's do that.
Twitter it out about a fresca. Mike gets Swollen Dome. The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. We'll have more on this story as it continues on throughout the night. Look, umpires are checking pitchers regularly. The Carl Nassib story today has been the biggest one in the National Football League. He is now the first openly gay active player in the NFL. And we've talked about the different ramifications of this and what it means, and we'll have more on that part of it. But maybe you remember the name Carl Nassib. Why do I know that name Carl Nassib? Yes, he is that Carl Nassib, the Hard Knocks hero from a couple of years ago when he was featured as one of the players on Hard Knocks. Two very specific things that Carl Nassib did as a young player coming into the league. You know, he was 24 years old. And one of the things he was famous for was giving financial advice to his teammates right before a big film session. Here's Carl Nassib.
Who here knows what compound interest is? This is real. Financial advisors are everywhere, okay? They'll take your money and they'll take 1% of everything you got. And you're like, oh, it's 1%. It doesn't matter.
Probably. I know it matters.
It matters a lot. Because if you learn this yourself, you can make $1 billion. We got a lot of money right now, right? This is the easiest equation to make you rich. You have $1 million, and after 7 years of getting 10% on that money every single year, okay, you're making money off of it. You're going to double it after 7 years. So you double your money every 7 years for 42 years. You get 64 times your original money. So you got $1 million. You can end up with $64 million by the time you retire.
Nice.
If you don't turn that. Listen, Miles has got
$30 million.
Okay, so let's say.
Yo, add that.
This motherfucker be a billionaire by the time he was.
So hold on. I'm asking this again. So you telling me,
bro? It's crazy.
I
swear to God.
You don't believe that.
Bro, I've been thinking that the past 3 months, and I don't spend like money on stupid. I met Taylor Swift, and before the concert, I was like, I need to buy a Rollie, so she knows I got it, and I didn't because of this.
So you telling us that all we gotta do is put $100,000 in the bank,
yep,
and let it sit there?
100%.
Just let it sit.
Don't touch it.
Interest.
It's called interest, and it's so easy. When you go to the store and you buy something for 10 grand, that's $640,000.
Perky boy,
I charge people for that. That's good knowledge, man.
You know, Mike, I didn't know financial advisors curse that much when they gave you advice.
You know what? People would probably listen to them more if they did. Listen, mother, if everybody had a financial advisor that cursed as much as, say, Samuel L. Jackson, you would listen.
Now, compound interest is the addition of interest to the principal sum of a loan or deposit. In other words, interest on interest. Yes.
Yeah. So just add that to the Margot Robbie bubble bath thing, right, and we win.
Now, it's not quite as simple, but it is that simple in that
it's
take
not the
this
bank.
Money and let it incur interest. Like, it's
right.
pretty
it's,
simple.
It's investments, certainly not the bank. Because right now, for a savings account, you're getting about 0.25%.
Yeah, it's not like you just put it in the bank and suddenly, oh, look at this. No, you have to find a way where you're going to get a return on the interest. What he said is right on. I mean, again, I don't know that I would have met a financial advisor that would cursed at me that much, but I would have paid more.
You got through to him. You saw the response.
Okay.
Sometimes you got to use it to wake people up because you start talking math, people get bored. So why not shake it up some?
So then you get out of that part with Carl Nassib. If you remember that part of Hard Knocks. Oh, boy, this guy knows what he's talking about. I'm going to go to him to help me with my money. And then Nassib talked about how he believed aliens are real. And he cited the Canadian Secretary of Defense and how he had been for years trying to tell people that aliens were real. This is a guy that was like the Canadian Secretary of Defense in the 60s who wound up saying, no, I'm not going to tell everybody about aliens because you don't live life good enough for me to deserve me to tell you. This is what the guy was. So you get Nassib talking about all these things. Hey, it's what you do with your money. And then it's, you know, aliens are real. Are they real? Yeah, I mean, I don't know that they're real, but I'm sure that they're real because of these things that I'm hearing. I'm like, oh, man, I just gave this guy all my 401k, man. And he's telling me that aliens are real. I just gave him all my money to help me out with this. Look at what he's doing to me.
Shoot it into space. Ask the aliens.
I know where everybody's money is. I'm going to get on a rocket ship, and I'm going to fly into space, and I'm going to get Charles Woodson's money. I know exactly where they're going to intercept it.
Wait. Do the aliens know the future?
It's going to be just like the end of The Martian, where they had to grab Matt Damon when he's coming in. It's like, oh, there's Charles Woodson's money. I'm just going to grab it and bring it back to Earth and be rich. All right.
I don't know that you want to joke about Charles Woodson's money because, I mean, he's going to come and crush your hand again.
Oh, what's he going to do?
And he won't give us any wine.
Nah,
that wine's pretty good,
wine.
By the way.
I'm not getting wine from him. You kidding? For some reason, he doesn't like me. I don't know why, Charles Woodson. I don't know why.
What did you say?
I didn't do anything. How often do we talk about? I don't know. I don't know why Charles.
For those Woodson that are unaware, at one point we went to a Super Bowl gathering, and Charles Woodson stared Jason down like nobody's business.
Yeah,
you
I shook my head. I said, "Hey,
you literally walked off with his 401k money." The way he shook your hand.
I shook his hand. I said, "Hey, Charles. Jason Smith, how you doing?" And this is back when I was right when we just started at Fox. He goes, "I know you." And he held my hand. I said, well, sure. I said, you know, I did NFL Fantasy Live, ESPN Radio. Now I'm at Fox. He goes, "No, I know you." And I said, okay.
Did you key his car?
No,
I
didn't.
Threaten
I never
that
threatened
a lot.
To it. No.
Did you ever get him?
No. And you know who never told me why was Akbar, who I know
Yeah.
And I said, Akbar buys you a meal. I go, Akbar, why is Charles Woodson? I'll find out. I never got an answer. I said, why does he think like, and I'm trying to think, did I ever say anything bad about him on the radio?
Sure you did. But I'm maybe like, when what? He was shifting positions, saying it wouldn't work.
He's so overrated, Charles Woodson. This guy's terrible.
He's
don't give your
done.
Opinions.
It's over.
I don't know what I don't know.
Nobody's able to change positions in the NFL. He'll never see another. Yeah, he'll never see another Pro Bowl again.
Forget it. You may as well be a wide receiver again, Charles. So I don't know why. But maybe if his money was out there in space and you got Carl Nassib would go grab it, suddenly that's where you keep the money. That's the safest place to keep money would be in space because it's really hard to get.
Well, and if he was mad, you can't hear him scream. Oh, look at me.
So Carl Nassib has been pretty entertaining. I mean, when this happened today and I saw the Carl Nassib, I said, oh, my God, he was. You know, I wonder if that's going to get brought up, the stuff from Hard Knocks. And sure enough, like within 15 minutes, it was. Remember when Carl Nassib gave everybody the financial advice? Remember when he said that aliens were real? I was like, oh, OK, people picked that up right away. Remember Carl Nassib. All right. So this is the other side of the Carl Nassib story today. But really, I really love the fact that, you know, he's so he's very passionate about both aliens and you know, financial investors. I mean,
it's good.
He's a very, you know, he's well seasoned and he's very versatile to love both of those things so much.
No, that's good. And if he's helping guys, I mean, think about the millions. I mean, doing great things today, right? Making the statement about who he is and his truth in coming out. And then also giving sound financial advice. So he's helping people on that side as well. He's changing a lot of lives right now with the things he's saying. And us being able to bring that to light, the financial management as well. You know, maybe some people will take that to heart. Just go do the simple math, folks. Take your calculator out. Do the 1 times 1.07 or whatever interest rate you want to give yourself. Don't get too crazy. Be conservative. And see how much like that seven-year doubling works. It does. It's good advice.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets Swollen Dome. The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. Just put them in, and it's going to be fine. You're going to make all that money, but then the aliens will come take it, so it's really not going to be worth anything.
There is that. I mean, with all risks, you know, this is for entertainment purposes only, but also I think you should look into it. That's all I could say.
We got more on this story coming up because, look, there's so many different avenues on Carl Nassib, and hopefully we'll clean up that soundbite when we play it for you. But coming up next, the biggest thing to know as we get set for a huge week in the NBA. I mean, besides that, you know, I picked the Hawks to go to the East Finals in the preseason and they're here. As we now know, players who aren't going to be playing in Game 2 of the West Finals. That's coming up next right here, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Hi, buddy.
Night off in the NBA. Doesn't mean we don't have headlines, and I mean...
Oh, headlines.
I mean headlines like, hey, boy, Jason Smith was right, man. Before the season started, he said the Hawks were going to play the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. He picked the Hawks, he picked the Bucks and the Clippers in the official Fox Sports Radio bracket challenge to play in the finals against each other. Told us Tom Thibodeau was going to be coach of the year in the NBA. He just basically told me everything I needed. We could have fast-forwarded in the Eastern Conference all the way from opening night till tonight because I just knew how everything was going to go, Mike. I told you all of it was going to happen this way.
Well, you know, the only thing you didn't hopscotch around and pick other teams and shuffle up and deal like you were at a card table in Vegas was the Thibodeau thing. You were emphatic that that was going to be right until maybe a player revolt in April. And that didn't happen. So that's good.
Yeah, the player revolt will happen maybe in the middle of next
April.
Year.
Yeah.
Next April when
maybe
they're like,
next
all right,
April.
We're done. We're done with the defense, Tom. We need to score points. But clearly, look, the Hawks, I even told you how it was going to go. They were going to finish middle of the pack in the East, but their firepower is going to put them on a run in the playoffs, and they were going to go to the East Finals, and here they are. And look, the Bucks eliminate the Nets over the weekend, and here we are now looking at the Hawks and the Bucks, which I said in December was going to be the Eastern Conference Final. I mean, that's pretty good. This is like my Aaron Rodgers, I told you he wanted out and won't play for them again prediction that I told you after the draft last year. I mean, this is at that level. I mean, I'm at that level right now in the NBA, Mike. I'm at that level.
If only you were putting some money on this stuff. I mean,
maybe just... I did. Maybe I got a lot of money on the Hawks going to the East Finals.
Yeah, with as much crowing as you do about this, we'd know that. You would have slipped somewhere along the way. You know, and when they were struggling and then they brought in Nate McMillan and be like, he's got to save my bet. That would have slipped out at some point. Especially, especially with the odds you were getting 60 to 1, man. If you'd bet them at 60 to 1, you're damn right. You would have been peacocking like a son of a gun. We would have had live video after every made shot and a celebratory bottle of champagne dunked over your head. We would have had all of that.
Maybe I did.
So you got no money on it.
Maybe I did. Hang on. Monroe, will you please lay out my blue suit for tomorrow? No. The Marc Jacobs. No, you know what? Not the Marc Jacobs. The Ralph Lauren. Yes, lay that one out for me for tomorrow. I'm only going to wear it in the morning, and then I'm going to go to my gray suit, all right? So just lay out my blue suit. Yes, thank you very much. Yes, in the sunroom. No, not the Suns room. No, the sunroom. The sun. Remember, I didn't pick the Suns. I picked the Hawks. In the sun. Thank you very much. Okay. So, look, I was just right. I mean, I've been right. And I was right about the Clippers. Remember, I picked the Clippers to go to the NBA Finals this year. But I admit, I'm not feeling as great about the Clippers right now, because going into Game 2 tomorrow night, we already know who's not going to be playing. Kawhi Leonard out with an ACL injury. Marcus Morris also is questionable with an injury. Chris Paul already has been ruled out for Game 2 due to COVID protocols. So now we know that it's going to basically be a repeat of Game 1, except maybe the Clippers aren't going to have Marcus Morris. And clearly, the way Game 1 went, the Suns had a better plan of attack coming in than the Clippers did. I almost felt like the Clippers were still, you know, running on the vapors of the big Game 7 win, and here we are in the conference finals for the first time ever, and they didn't seem like they had, not that they didn't have their heads on straight, but they didn't seem ready for Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, and the Suns clearly did. So while I'm nervous about going into Game 2 tomorrow, you know, no Kawhi, no Chris Paul, okay, the one thing I can tell you, which is what the Clippers have done all season long, is they are a resilient bunch of players, man. I'll tell you what. And that's one thing that can get you through a lot of different times and get you through a lot of adversity. When you are resilient, down 2-0 in the playoffs, doesn't matter, we're coming back to win. Down 2-0 again, doesn't matter, coming back to win. We're missing the best player in the playoffs, doesn't matter, we're going to win this series. We're going to win these last two games and win the series. They have been really resilient, and sometimes that's the biggest compliment I can pay a team. And that's what the Clippers have, basically, because this team right now, it's kind of faulty, right? You know, you're expecting Paul George and Terrence Mann. Whoa, I know, the dude had a great Game 7, but come on, man, you're banking on Terrence Mann. This is not a perfect team, but because they have been through things that you never thought they would get through. They're never going to. They're down 2-0 here. They're done. Kawhi is hurt. They're done. And they still find a way through. That's what I'm banking on the Clippers getting back in this series tomorrow.
Well, the question is, can they do the same boxing 15-round kind of thing going against a heavyweight? Right, like Devin Booker. Can you wear him down like you did the last two stars that you battled against? And maybe you can. Right, and maybe he takes a beating. You look at the rotations. You've had stars step up. Paul George has been phenomenal for the most part, right? Because when we saw Ben Simmons refuse to shoot yesterday, I'm like, oh, that was shades of the – and James Harden didn't want the ball and was looking for Kevin Durant immediately in the fourth quarter. That was shades of Paul George. Remember when he didn't want the ball and mm-hmm. handed it right back to Kawhi and then over to Morris? And so, like, we've got the – we can connect all these series together. But Morris shot terribly in his 21 minutes. He was 3 of 11 for 6 points. Reggie Jackson gave you another 24, 10 of 19 overall, 33% from three-point range, good. And you're looking for a contribution. You got 36 points off the bench. The Suns just 22. A little bit more depth, and you've got the agitators, because remember how they worked in the last series? That's the other thing. At my command, unleash hell comes in when you start looking at Rondo and Beverly. You don't necessarily expect a ton of point production. I know Beverly hit those three-pointers, and you and I were on air virtually looking at each other with that, what the hell's going on here? The walls have come down as they vanquished Utah, but you also can get contributions from these guys. I don't know how deep Phoenix will be. Obviously, once Chris Paul is cleared, if, when, all of those things, then yeah, obviously it opened things up. For the moment, it's second-year guy Cameron Johnson trying to help lead the way. For the Clippers, it seems like it's the next man up alongside Paul George every night. So I wouldn't be worried. Pace yourselves. A loss is, well, it's just one. It's one game, as we've seen. And Ty Lue has been making fantastic adjustments. So let's see what he's got on tap for Game 2.
So we found out today that Vegas Raiders defensive lineman Carl Nassib is now the first ever openly gay active player in the National Football League. He made that announcement earlier today on social media. If we can grab that soundbite, get it ready to go. Nassib went on Instagram, and an announcement that took us a lot by surprise. No one's expecting this to happen, but here it was, and it's become the biggest story of the night.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds. That's all I have for you guys. I hope you have a great day. Work hard.
Well, that's a lot. That's all you have for us. That's a lot. And I'm hopeful that other teams are going to match that donation to Trevor Project, which is a great thing in the LGBTQ community. But I want to focus on what he said in the middle of his statement there by saying, you know, at some point soon, I'm hopeful that announcements like this aren't big deals and aren't newsworthy. And you know what? He's right. Whether he knows how close he is to this happening or not, I don't know. But I'll tell you this much. He is really close to having announcements like this just be an announcement. And it's not newsworthy. And it's not something that we have to worry about being a polarizing topic anymore like it was with Michael Sam. And I thought a lot about Michael Sam today because it's been 7 years since he tried to become the first openly gay player in the NFL. He never made an active roster, didn't make a team, so it didn't happen for him. But I remember thinking, because, you know, Moneyball's been big in our house the past few weeks. Like, my daughter is obsessed with Moneyball. She changed the text tone on my phone to when Jonah Hill tells Carlos Pena he was traded. So every time I get a text now, you just hear, "Carlos, you've been traded to the Tigers," right?
Wow.
So that's my text. If you call my phone right now, you get that. "Carlos, you traded to the Tigers."
That's pretty good.
So I've been thinking, and the line that John Henry's character of the Red Sox has at the end when he's interviewing Billy Beane for a job, he says, you know, the first guy through the wall always gets bloody. And when Billy Beane had his run of Moneyball, a lot of people didn't like it, didn't embrace it, and he got pummeled for it. But now, hey, people are starting to see that he had something going on. And Michael Sam was the first one through that wall. And he got bloody because it was a big argument over whether or not a gay player would be accepted in the locker room. Would he be able to play? Would his teammates accept him? Would the coaches accept him? Would they be able to be okay with having a gay player in the locker room and not default to things like, oh, when a guy goes into the shower, is he going to be checking me out? I mean, that's the conversation that we had with Michael Sam, and that made it really difficult for him. Like I said, the first guy through the wall always gets bloody. But because of that, we were able to see exactly what the reaction was. And the reaction from most players was, we don't really care. You saw today the reaction from players around the league. Saquon Barkley was the first guy to say, hey, good props to you, man. Awesome. The Raiders put out a statement saying, we love you. Mark Davis put out a statement. So seeing what happened with Michael Sam, it was more the upper echelons of the NFL. We don't know how ready they were for a gay active player in the NFL. But now it's 7 years later, and the world has changed, and we've gotten used to ideas of an openly gay player in the league. And now it's being met with support. And is it being met with any negativity? No, not yet. Doesn't mean it's not going to, but it's not going to be the reaction that it was with Michael Sam, because we've seen the story. We've got had a chance to get used to the idea. We understand that if players don't care, if certain factions don't care, then why should we care? And it's going to be exactly what he wanted. What Nassib wants is for this to be an announcement, and then, you know, hopefully I can draw attention to the Trevor Project, and I can move on and play football. And that's exactly what it's going to be, and it's going to happen real soon, because as you get players doing it now, they're, hey, yes, I'm gay. You're going to have bigger stars that say they're gay, and that's going to be a topic. But within a year or two, players are going to say this, and it's not going to be something that's incredibly newsworthy. It's going to be, oh, this player is gay and they're playing in the NFL, and that's where it is. And because Michael Sam was the first guy, and like I said, he went through that wall, you know, now guys like Carl Nassib can go through it a lot easier, and the players behind him can go through it easier, and it becomes a topic of conversation that is, oh, I didn't know that. Okay. And we move on. And that's the best part of the story, is that very soon it's not going to be that story.
Flipped on the camera and said his piece very quickly and to the point. And in a further part of the state was like, yeah, all right, I probably will decline a bunch of interviews. I'm not really that public a guy this way. So, you know, thank you. Be well and hopefully better days. And to his his bravery, his his willingness to step forward. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of statistics in some of his statement included some of those in terms of, you know, mental health and suicide attempts and all of that, that we've become as a society, I think, more keenly aware of, and trying to support. We've got Pride Month going on, so the messages of support and all the different places where people can seek, you know, help with talking to their families and the like. But in locker rooms, I don't know what the actual reaction will be for some members of it, coaching staffs and players, and perhaps we'll never truly know, right? As we talked with Jason Lockenfora a little bit earlier in the show, the same idea that there have always been gay players. And then it's a question of, well, how many of their teammates knew and kept it quiet and things of that nature, versus, you know, it could spark some conversations. Either way, I think perhaps we're more equipped now in society to actually have those conversations as opposed to be dismissive, as perhaps you may recall from 7 years ago. So, yeah, it's a new day. And the other is, you know, folks that might have their level of dissent and maybe disagree with it, maybe don't feel as empowered to voice such either in this.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because overall in the world, I don't know that people have not the interest, but they have the sense of value in this story to stand up and be on one side or the other on it. You know, I just don't think it. I think people are more used to conversations like this. Look, it's Pride Month. You know, we decided to come out during Pride Month, and everybody is open now, much more open with being gay and being openly gay, and the world is getting better now. Certainly, we got a lot of things to do to get better. But
well, and you'll have
the
that percentage
opening up.
Dopey fans, yeah. Too. Look what they just had to do for Mexico,
right?
In their, you know, soccer world. Right?
Yeah, so. But I think overall the reaction, when you look at what social media is going to be and what the reaction on TV and the radio is going to be, is like, hey, what a great day, what a great story, and then we're going to be on to something else. You know, I don't know that there's that the verve and the fire for this topic that there was 7 years ago, and that's what's going to help. Hey, you know what? Okay. Gay players in the NFL, and everybody say, hey, I can do it now. It's okay. I can come out and I can say I'm gay and I don't have to worry about as much as I would have 7 years ago. Now, there's still things I got to navigate in my life, and that's obvious, but I don't have to worry about overwhelmingly worry, you know, concerned with what's going to happen here, what's going to happen when I meet these teammates, that stuff is going to be gone. And the general sense from fans are going to be, okay, this is a big story. It's right. And then we're going to be on to something else. It doesn't have that big staying power that it used to. And that's going to help accomplish exactly what Nassib wanted. And that is, I want to be able to say it and be able to have it not be a story. And hopefully something like this is exactly how it goes in a couple of years. And we're there really, really soon, I'm telling you. Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Today is a great day for that. Coming up next, you want to talk about who it's a great day for. The biggest streak in sports is now over.
Whoa.
It is over. Well, I mean, DeGrom didn't give up a run. But the other biggest streak in sports is over. And it's next right here, Fox.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Fox Sports Radio, The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Yo.
And it's not often that Johnny Drama is quoted in the world of sports, but it was tonight. Come on, Drama, going to the Valley, not the Sahara. You got to be properly hydrated, E. But it was victory tonight for a Major League Baseball team that hadn't won in quite a long time. In fact, in the past 20 days, the Yankees had more triple plays than the Arizona Diamondbacks had victories. But tonight, victory for the Diamondbacks. And they put it on social media with Johnny Drama from Entourage yelling out victory. And this is what the sweet smell of success sounded like on the Diamondbacks radio network.
And a fly ball center field. Ketel Marte is there. He's under it. And he's got it. And the Diamondbacks have won a ball game here tonight. They snap a 17-game losing streak, beating the Brewers 5-1, their first win since June 1st.
Listen to that crowd of 9,800 people. Hey, woo-hoo! We won a game.
They should all get free tickets to come back because they're good luck charms.
No,
were you here for any of the losses? No. Okay, you get tickets to the next game.
Hey, I know this is great, but could I get Suns tickets instead? I mean, could I do that? I really don't want to go to these games. I want to go to Suns game instead.
I'd make a joke about fighting, but that's a serious business, man.
Now, still, because, you know, we want to be accurate, they still have a 23-game road losing streak. This one was at home, but they break the 17-game losing streak that they had all the way back since June 1st. So the Diamondbacks diet, hopefully you weren't following it, but we had the idea last week. Hey, when they win, you get to eat whatever you want, right? They win a game, you can eat. And when they have the lead, you can have a snack. And you can eat for a little while, but then they wind up losing. So it still weighs you to eat pretty regularly. But tonight, man, you are going whole hog if you are on the Diamondbacks diet, man. You are eating like a king for the next 24 hours. The finest meats and cheeses in all the land, Kenny Mayne used to say. Well, probably still says it, but just, you know, we don't know where now.
He'll be saying that in a different venue at some point. But, yeah, for Merrill Kelly, here's your moment to shine, man. You want to talk about a guy that they needed a big effort, 7 innings pitched, just 1 earned run, brought his ERA under 6. That's good. Almost down to almost towards 5-0. So good for him. And Anderson couldn't get out of the second for Milwaukee. It's just huge. I don't even know how to best describe it when you get that kind of losing streak away. It's we've seen it so often in sports, right, where you have these bad turns. I just always kept thinking of different Baltimore Orioles teams. Of course, we can do that most years with the Orioles where they go through a really bad streak. It's like the prospects are coming, though, buddy. The prospects are coming. But for the Diamondbacks, yeah, good on them. 21-53 now. If they hadn't had that long, pesky losing streak, they were a 500 team.
Torey Lovello, Jason Smith, Fox Sports Radio. Hey, yeah. Do you think the Brewers let you win tonight?
Oh, no. Their bats looked exceptionally sluggish. Did they allow Kelly to put whatever he wanted on the ball?
Torey Lovello, Jason Smith, I'm sorry. Do you think the Brewers put sticky stuff on their bats and that really hurt them and they didn't understand what the whole Major League Baseball thing was and that's why they didn't win tonight? Is that what's happening? I just want to answer me. Maybe that's what I would say if I was a Diamondbacks. See? Pitchers were all loading up against us. The first day they're checking, we win a game. I would protest all of their losses up until now. That's what I would do if I were the Diamondbacks. Protest all those losses. We should be in first place. We should be ahead of the Dodgers. We should be ahead of the Giants. We should be ahead of everybody. We should have a 10-game lead in the division.
I'd like to see the argument in a courtroom. Daniel Caffey leads the way.
Hey, Torey, Jason Smith, Fox Sports Radio. When can you literally, realistically expect to win again?
We'll have to look to the day-to-day odds. Are they actually treated as independent variables or not?
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets Swollen Dome. The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Coming up next, we have the biggest story in the NFL involving somebody that Tom Brady said, you're going to take that MF-er over me? That's next right here. Fox.